Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Stu does America.
Subscribe to the program, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Of course, we're also available on Blaze TV. It's blazetv.com/Stu. Promo code is Stu. You should know, tonight, big interview with Glenn Beck and Donald Trump going to be airing in the Glenn Beck TV slot, so make sure to check that out. But we're going to start tonight by doing the left's impotent 2028 field. It's never too early to look ahead. Who the heck knows what's going to happen in three years, in the 2028 election cycle. But I was fascinated to see that the left's trying to put together some sort of group of people that they will select from for 2028. And I will say it's not a promising list. It's not looking that good. The Hill did this, by the way, the top 10 Democratic contenders for 2028. And I think we should just go through them. Is there anyone here you're scared of? Anyone here that you think is going to potentially win or could actually even win the nomination? It's hard to believe. They have this. This is from their contender rankings. They literally have at number 10, Stephen A. Smith. Now, Stephen A. Smith is an ESPN personality who kind of just barely sort of confirmed he might think about running. And already he's on the list at number 10. This is how pathetic this field is. This is how thin the bench is for the Democratic Party. Now, I mean, you look over at the opponents. I know a lot of people are talking about the third term thing for Donald Trump. You know, it's not my bag. But I will say J.D. Vance looks like the clear leader, unless things go particularly poorly for the Trump administration. You still see people like Ron DeSantis on the other side, a couple of others that could sneak in there. But like, you know, the right has a sane, sensible path forward. It's kind of logical where they might go. The other side, not so much. I mean, Stephen A. Smith is making the list. I mean, honestly, would you even have known he was a Democrat? I mean, surely kind of sounds like that sometimes, but I don't think that was even really public information very recently. But he's number 10. Number 9, Rahm Emanuel, like the chief of staff for Barack Obama. I know the right, you know, looks at the Obama era a little bit differently than the left. The left thought the Obama era was a huge success. I would say it was not. And I know they want to go back to the Obama era because everything they've done since has been an obvious and overt failure. But Rahm Emanuel, really? He wound up being mayor of Chicago after that. But really, has anyone talked about him in years? It's hard to imagine he would even have a chance. Number 8 is Pete Buttigieg. Now, Mayor Pete was a mayor of a town. He was criticized by the Biden campaign for not filling potholes. That was his wonderful run. I guess he did better than the typical mayor no one had ever heard of. Like, usually that happens. You get into that race, and you know, even like on the right, the mayor of Miami ran, and people weren't really familiar with him. Didn't really go anywhere. Mayor Pete did kind of rise up, get to the high single digits when he ran back in the day. But does anyone really think that he's a threat? He was kind of promoted as this big guy. And I swear the Biden administration was like, you know, Pete Buttigieg might be some competition for us. Let's bring him into the role that is the worst possible role in government, transportation secretary, which he idiotically accepted. And then just watch as trains derailed all over the place and poisonous gas was released. That was his legacy. So I don't know. The fact that he's number 8 is a real, it's got to be terrifying for you if you're on the left. Number 7, J.B. Pritzker. I mean, who put together this list? This is a catastrophe. There he is, J.B. Attractive man, sure. But is he really a contender? The one reason, of course, he would be talked about at all in this context is he has a lot of money. He's a billionaire. So you can never count out a billionaire. You know, you can spend a lot and you can buy a bunch of votes. Didn't work for Michael Bloomberg. I doubt it's going to work for J.B. Pritzker, but he's there at all. Now, you might say, like, okay, this field sucks so far. Then where's the big names? Because so far, this is a bunch of nobodies outside of Stephen A. Smith, who almost certainly won't run. But number 6, get the big name start. Kamala Harris. Yeah. I mean, they are actually putting her on the list of contenders for 2028 after what happened. She ran in 2020. She failed miserably in 2020. She then became vice president as a gift, because I guess when you call Joe Biden racist, you get rewarded by becoming the vice president of the United States. She runs that into the ground. She somehow, without getting any votes, becomes the nominee, because suddenly people are convinced that the thing that we all saw with Joe Biden over all these years was actually true. And then she gets, you know, demolished in the actual campaign. I mean, she didn't get demolished. And she lost a somewhat close election, but she lost all seven swing states. That's kind of bad, right? Again, it's in between a blowout and a super razor thin election. It wasn't 2000, but it wasn't 2008 either. I mean, it was in the middle there. But Kamala Harris, really? If she's on your list, you should flush the list. Number five, and this is one I see a lot of hype for on the left, is Governor Wes Moore. You might not know him at all. He is the governor of Maryland. Hasn't really accomplished an awful lot, kind of an unknown nationally. But he's generally a pretty good communicator, a guy who is on the left, would hit some of the intersectional barriers that must be breached each time you pick someone. You can't pick based on merit, obviously, alone. It has to be skin color or genitals have to be mixed into the conversation. So Wes Moore is a guy who he seems to be an Obama favorite, seems to have some buzz on the left. I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of remains in the top half of a top 10 here over the next few years. I am more surprised that they're even trying this with number four, Gavin Newsom. Newsom, look, he's been a catastrophe for the state of California. Let's be honest about it. He was awful during COVID. He went out to dinner when he was trying to convince everyone else they needed to be in lockdown. That was just a total disaster. He almost got recalled. And people are like, well, he won that election by a large margin. Yeah, I mean, just getting recalled at all is pretty bad. And it was pretty close. I mean, he was going up against Republicans who, obviously, Republican candidates in California have a very low chance of actually winning an election. And yet it was still pretty close up until the last couple of weeks where he opened up a lead. And then after that, burned the state to the ground. Now, I don't think he actually lit the fires. I'm not fully convinced that he specifically himself, you know, lit a match and threw it into a field. I don't know that he specifically did that, but the recovery has been a disaster. The situation with the way he responded was terrible. Wasn't all his fault, just mostly. So that's going to turn him into a presidential candidate. I don't even understand it. By the way, Newsom is commenting on the future of the party. He says, I don't even know what the party is. And, you know, of course, how could he know? He changes his opinions every 5 days. How could he possibly know what's going on with the party? Just the other day, he was like, oh, I'm against men and women's sports. Like, where did this guy come from? He's trying to come off as this sensible Democrat, which is a path that is dangerous to Republicans. Someone who actually sounds sensible on the left, who isn't constantly embracing nine-month abortions and, you know, men and women's sports and, you know, trans porn for your third-year grader in school, like all that crap. If you go away from that and shun that and sort of outwardly run against it and say, I'm not that kind of Democrat, there's a real vulnerability for the right with that type of person. I'm scared of it, frankly, because, you know, there's not a lot of Republicans who can handle this. And we will see. Gavin Newsom is not the guy to pull off that strategy, though. He is a far left, insane person. But here is what he says about the party itself. We have not done a forensic of what just went wrong. Period. Full stop, Newsom said. I don't think I know it. I mean, to the extent that I'm marginally part of this party, now he's like distancing himself. See, I'm not really a Democrat. I'm sensible. I represent the state larger than 21 state populations combined. And I can assure you that there has not been a party discussion that I'm aware of that has included the state of California. Later in the interview, Newsom said he wasn't sure what the Democratic Party truly represents, who it's leading, and where it wants to go. I don't know what the party is. I'm still struggling with that. Well, no one knows what the party is. I mean, it is... There's a battle going on the left, and you're kind of seeing that play out. Now, Gavin Newsom is not a representative of the sane wing, if there is one, of the Democratic Party. He is completely nuts, and up until last week was a far leftist. You know, he's going to go bounce back and forth because, I mean, he doesn't truly believe in much of anything other than the fact that Gavin Newsom's awesome. Like, that is the kind of the beginning and end of his belief system, but that's where he is right now. Number three on this list is Gretchen Whitmer. Again, Gretchen Whitmer at number three is a disaster. She's terrible. She was terrible during COVID. She had some sympathy because of what they said was a kidnapping scheme of her in Michigan. And so she was able to kind of hang on to power. But she is not a national figure. She's not someone who I think is a real threat to win the nomination, let alone the presidency. And, the fact that you're that close, you get her at number three is a real, it's got to make you really nervous as a Democrat. Now, number two on the list is somebody who I think does have some potential and is, I think, a bit scary to the right. It's Josh Shapiro. Shapiro's handled a lot of the situations in his state pretty well. And I mean that not necessarily is that he runs the state well, but that he is able to kind of navigate the PR windfall that has hit him on the positive and negative side. He did a pretty good job coming out talking about against political violence on, and he kind of talked about it on either side of the aisle when it came to his house being burned down. He has the same sort of sympathetic view, at least among most Americans, because of that incident. Now, look, those incidents were totally different. His house really was lit on fire, by the way, lit on fire by a crazy person who was anti-Israel. That he didn't get the same sympathy from the media because of that, because they, of course, are sympathetic with the Hamas side of the argument. And I think for that reason, it's the reason why he was not the VP candidate and dummy Tim Walz was, because he's Jewish. And there is an anti-Jew, anti-Israel vibe on the left, a good chunk of it. There's a Hamas wing of the party that's not going to let this happen. And so Josh Shapiro is running up against not only any conservative candidate that might be out there, a J.D. Vance, which would be a difficult person to go up against in a nomination battle or presidential battle. This is, of course, if he wins the nomination. But also he's got to win that side of his party, and he's got to go up against, I don't know, what's the percentage that just hates Israel and anything aside, associated with Jews? 30, 40, 50% of the party? I don't know what it is. It's really high. And it prevented him from being the VP nominee. It may have prevented Kamala Harris from winning. I mean, again, Tim Walz was a real negative on that campaign. He was a disaster. By the way, you notice Tim Walz, I'm not going to all spoil the rest of this list. He's not number one. He's not even anywhere on this top 10 list. He was a disaster. Josh Shapiro would have been formidable. And, I'm glad they didn't put him in there because, remember, as I said, it was not 2008. This was not a 2000 election that was, within a 500 votes in one state. But there were seven swing states. Trump did win them all. But the one he won in the biggest blowout of the three blue wall states he needed to win, she needed to win one of those states. The biggest blowout was 2 points, 2%. This was a relatively close election. And who knows? I don't think Shapiro would have made the difference, but certainly would have been closer. But the number one, and this is fascinating, this used to be a joke. We've joked about this before. We joked about how they never run AOC as a nominee. Yeah, AOC, number one, the number one possibility, according to The Hill, for 2028. And I will say there is a path there. The path is people really don't like Donald Trump. The presidency goes terrible, and they'll just reflect to whatever Democrat wins. And she's seen as the only one taking this seriously. Look, she is blatantly, and this is happening with, I believe, Bernie Sanders, okay. They are trying to give her the Bernie Sanders position in the party, which is lead contender to the establishment, right? They want to make AOC the face of the party. There's nothing better to me when it comes to Democrats than AOC becoming the face of the party, with the possible exception of Jasmine Crockett, right? Like I that would be awesome too, to be truthful. But like making AOC the voice of the left is a good thing for Republicans generally, but if things go very badly, like if there's a massive economic crisis, then any Democrat will win. And if she can win the nomination, she can. That's where the energy of the party is. We will see if that happens. The next AOC young Democrats are aiming to topple incumbents inside their own party. There's for many of these young candidates, their campaigns are centered around a shared dissatisfaction with how sitting lawmakers have fought back against Trump's second term. This is the argument for AOC and how she could potentially win. Democratic leaders are divided on whether to support this effort. They'll come up with a reason not to support it because they're going to want to put an establishment type person in there. And AOC doesn't get along with a lot of them, but It's not impossible, boys and girls. By the way, also in the mix, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, I don't buy it. Senator Cory Booker, he gave that big long speech, and now he's all the way down here in the also-rans. Senator John Fetterman, which I don't believe would happen. Ro Khanna, again, probably not. Amy Klobuchar, no. Senator Chris Murphy, no. John Ossoff, probably more popular, more possible than many of the others on this list. And finally, the last one on the also-rans, Governor Tim Stupid Walls. Do you ever catch your reflection and think, gosh, did my jeans shrink? Or is the last month's great diet and all that, those lost pounds, maybe the diet's already staging a comeback? The pounds you fought off love an encore. They creep back and then invite friends very, very quickly. Every glossy magazine headline, going to give you some sort of miracle. And then, of course, they slip away while you chase the next trend. Your confidence, your closet, your health all pay the cover charge. The revolving door is exhausting, and there's that sort of ping pong back and forth. It was why a team of physicians built something called Lean. It's a simple daily supplement. No needle drama, no pharmacy line. Natural, clinically reviewed ingredients work on what they call the Lean 3. First, the steady blood sugar. They study the blood sugar so that, like, you know, the 3 p.m. candy bowl stops. They end, hopefully. You got the, of course, the second step in this process. They silence the signal that says the fridge light is something you want to keep popping on over and over again. You don't need to stand there at the fridge. Nothing's going to change inside. Third, they flip stored fat into energy you can use. Lean will not do the push-ups for you, unfortunately, but they will make sure that the work that you do finally sticks. Are you ready to lock the door on the comeback tour of your former failed diet? Grab 20% off today with the code STU20 at TakeLean.com. It's TakeLean.com. The code is STU20. TakeLean.com.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
I'm joined now by Dan Andros. He's managing editor of CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcasts, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Stu. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. I wanted to bring you on and talk about Carmelo Anthony. And normally we do talk sports a decent amount. I'm not talking about the NBA Hall of Famer, although I do feel a little bit bad for him, frankly, in this particular situation, because the Carmelo Anthony we're about to talk about starts with a K, and he is a teen accused of fatally stabbing Austin Metcalf. He's now moved to an undisclosed location after reported death threats. Now, it's interesting that people are concerned that he's being threatened by death, which you should, of course, never, ever do, not threaten anyone in any way. However, he actually did kill somebody. So I don't know, we're supposed to feel bad for a murderer who's being threatened with the thing he did to a totally innocent person.
Right. And of course, Stu, it's alleged murderer, right, until we have this trial. But I mean, sure, it looks bad, right? Like, whatever their disagreement they had in the tent, alleged, you know, like they had these team tents set up at the track area, and he was apparently in the wrong, you know, at the other team's tent, which would seem as kind of instigating under, I mean, again, we weren't there, don't know, but that's sure what it seems like if he was there in the other team's tent. And then, okay, if someone tells you to get out, you don't get to stab them because of that. I don't really see how you're there claiming that his life was in danger. Not really sure how. I don't think the other guys had any weapons that we're aware of. So it's a very odd, and I've seen, you know, articles saying it's a quote unquote uphill battle, but it's also bizarre seeing his sort of PR team come out and make it seem like he's the victim here almost.
Yeah, I will say it is a bit of an uphill battle when your client has murdered someone, a young person, in cold blood for absolutely no reason whatsoever other than being touched, quote unquote touched, when he dared him. He said, touch me, you'll find out. what's going to happen. You know, that did go on. He did wind up stabbing a young man into the chest who's dead. And then they kind of bring out this PR team and spokesperson. The spokesperson, I don't know if he's helping all that much so far. It seems like a kind of a disaster, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And I'm forgetting this guy's name off the top of my head, but it's I think it's Dominique Alexander. He's apparently the head of one of these groups, like kind of like a, I don't know, one of these pop up progressive activist groups that like just like Soros funds and gives them $1,000 and they exist. It's like called the Next Generation Action Network, whatever that is. So he does this press conference and he like releases all this stuff, like these POV videos of him walking from inside to his car while the press is trying to get an interview with him. Just very odd behavior. Well, Metcalf's dad shows up to this press conference that this guy, Dominique Alexander, is having with his client. And they kick him out. And he calls it disrespectful that the dad was showing up. And I like trying to wrap my head around this logic. And then, of course, you know, somehow the guy with a dead son, he's got a dead son, and you're mad at him for showing up. You can't show any sympathy or empathy for this dad who just lost his son because your client stabbed him for absolutely no reason. And it's just bizarre that they can be this. And again, it makes you wonder, Stu, and we've played this game many times, but like, let's play switch the race. And would any of these tactics PR wise be allowed even remotely if the situation was, the melanin counts were reversed on the individuals involved here?
Yeah, it really is it really is shocking to see. And it's funny because like you go through kind of these standard stories, the you know, look, this is not the first time race is being used to inflame a situation. But usually there's at least a case, right? Like they, you know, Michael Brown, where he robbed a store and then he wound up attacking a police officer. And there was this argument as to whether he did it and whether he had a hands up, don't shoot moment and all this stuff that wound up later on, you know, not being true. You know, there was the several of these stories have kind of turned this way where there at least be some argument about it. This particular case, there doesn't seem to be one at all. It was a guy who came up to Carmelo Anthony, told him he was in the wrong tent. They kind of had a bit of a disagreement. He said, touch me and you'll see what happens or whatever. He, I guess, touches him kind of like in a maybe a little bit of a I'll do what I want type of thing, but not like a punch, not an assault, nothing like that. No one's even accusing him of that, Metcalf. And now we're supposed to suddenly turn the man who just stabbed somebody in the heart for no reason into the victim here. I because of his skin color, I can't even follow this.
No, and I was shocked that there was a give, send, go account. And I mean, I haven't looked at it in a few days, but last I looked, it was approaching $500,000 for this kid. And they've got him like holed up in a upscale gated community there in near Frisco. And you know, really nice houses out there and close to $1 million houses. And the report was that they might have bought a new car. It's like, what is going on here? And that the sentiment is falling on this side. I mean, this is almost Hamas level stuff where you're like, you know what? I know the Israelites, you know, the Israel lost, you know, 1500 Jewish people that day. But you know what's really bad? It's what's happening to these Hamas terrorists over here. It's like, it's almost on this level because it's that absurd what this kid did. You can't imagine. I mean, if you talk about Wild West, everyone's worried about the Wild West too. Oh, we can't have guns because of the Wild West. Well, that's what this is. I mean, this is like, don't touch me. I'm going to, and then I shoot you or I stab you. You don't get to do that because someone, that's not a life threatening situation. If someone gives you a nudge or tells you to get lost and even shoves you, even if they did punch you, you don't get to stab them.
Mm. Yeah, it's very, very strange. And I've noticed, and let me run this theory by you here, Dan. Tell me what you think. Because there seems to be a change. We you know, you used to work here at The Blaze. You worked on Glenn's TV show. And we talked a lot about how the left wing, the liberals in the country always would work very hard to find the most sympathetic character to carry their torch, right? Like, Rosa Parks is a great example. There was another African-American woman, I believe, who was on the bus and had the same experience as Rosa Parks before Rosa Parks, but they didn't make her into the example because she had some, private, I think she was a unwed mother at the time. It was controversial. They wanted to find the perfect person to carry this torch. It seems like they've gone the other direction on this now, where we're seeing like people like who are suspected MS-13 gang members with accusations of domestic violence. Well, they're going to be the ones that we're going to go down and visit and become the torchbearer for illegal immigration. Here's another situation. Our racial example, the person we're going to hold up as the example in our racist or racial conflicts in this country, is going to be a person who, without any argument at all, just stabbed a young boy for no reason. And like, they're not even searching for good examples of people who maybe are in tough times to challenge these policies. Now it seems like they'll run to the worst possible examples of people and just give them a full out embrace.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen this is like the laziness factor. If I could guess and put the blame on any one major factor that's kind of led to this shift that you're talking about here, it's got to be social media. Social media has made us as a culture insanely lazy. People just now they have their narrative and they settle into that and they don't care. They'll just throw anything out there. And we've seen the tribalism get worse and worse and worse, and people will just defend anything. And this is not just a left issue. I think the left is 100 times worse at it, but the right does it too. They'll defend undefensible things on issues. Now, again, the major qualifier there is the left, I believe, is 100 times more egregious on this phenomenon than the right is. The right has, I feel like, been more consistent over the years to their values and trying to stay consistent on those. Whereas I feel like the left now completely has jumped the shark and just seems like it's like social media in real life. Like people who just scroll, they don't really know the story at all, but share it. And it goes viral. And then, oops, sorry, that story was incorrect. That was a fake meme that I just made up. And then the retweet apology gets like, four tweets. And the other one got like 50 million. But I feel like that phenomena on social media now, it's like those people that grew up with this are bringing it into real life.
Yeah, I think that's true. You notice this on social media a lot where, again, we've worked together for a long time. I remember going back to the 2004 election, and that was John Kerry and George W. Bush. And the big controversy in that election was John Kerry saying, I actually did vote for the $87 billion before I voted against it. And it was like they put it in every single ad. Like they couldn't believe that someone would have this ridiculous justification and kind of flip-flop, and that was kind of the image that was, put on John Kerry with good meaning.
Right.
But like now you see people, and I see this on the right and the left, where people will support one position and they will be completely convinced of it. And then 2 days later, whatever mechanism in social media, whether it's, leadership from political leaders or whatever, changes, and they just completely flip-flop to the other side of the argument. And they're not embarrassed by it at all. Like, it's just normal state of affairs.
I mean, we used to joke about this with, like, Richard Nixon saying, like, when we were watching what happened to Bill Clinton and everything else, we're like, Richard Nixon's got to be rolling in his grave going, really? Like, all I had to be was in a different era, and there's no way I would have had to resign over this thing? I mean, I didn't think about John Kerry, but that's a great point. I mean, we had the John Kerry's Waffle House thing going because of that. Would have survived that. I mean, there's no way that would have been a massive negative impact on his game. It would have been a blip on the radar, his flip-flopping on that. Nobody cares about flip-flopping now. So John Kerry's probably sitting there going, Teresa, order.
Yeah, I know. Teresa. You're right. It's true because, it must be frustrating for those politicians who had to go through that period because now you're criticized by your own side if you don't flip-flop. If you are consistent with the same views that you had 10 years ago, you're all of a sudden the bad guy. You're weak. You're folding to the left or whatever. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It's like a loyalty test first before it is actually this is what I believe and this is what I don't believe. And in this case is no different than others. I kind of call me crazy and old-fashioned, Stu, but I kind of like looking for the facts and letting that play out. I don't have allegiance on this case one way or another. I don't know either one of these people. I don't know them. So Everyone else just wants to take it and say, I think this one fits my agenda, so yay, I'm going to yell about it. Like, how about we just wait and see for the facts to come in and then make a judgment? Everyone would rather judge first, facts later. Yeah. And then if the facts don't match up, it's like, eh, we'll move on from that.
Yeah, I don't know. It could call me crazy, but like maybe siding with a victim of the murder would be maybe the way to go. I know that's it's a crazy thing these days. Amazing. Dan Andros, managing editor, CBN News. Be sure to check him out on the Quick Start podcast, CBN's Quick Start, over on where I guess it's wherever you get your podcasts, you can get Quick Start. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Stu.
Well, the economy has been a bit of a roller coaster over the past few weeks. Dow today bouncing back, rallying 900 points after Trump softened stance on Powell and China tariffs. Actually, popped as high as, I think, 1,100 points, then dropped back down to about 600 points up. I'm not sure. I haven't checked in a little while. I'm not sure where it ended up today. But I will say it's a difficult thing. You know, Glenn is going to be talking to Donald Trump tonight. I'm sure he'll be asking about the economy and which, you know, what the long term plan here is, because I think that's the difficult situation. If you think about yourself, of someone who, if you're running a factory and maybe you're producing your stuff over in China, and you're thinking to yourself, you know what, I want to bring this back. I'm going to bring my manufacturing back to the United States, or at least a more allied nation. But you don't know what that policy is. And it might be a situation where you need those big tariffs on Chinese competition to be able to afford to build the stuff here. And what happens when you build a factory and you're finally ready to open it, and then the policies change? You just, it's impossible for people to navigate right now. I mean, that's the biggest problem. This is why you want these things. Even if you're going to do tariffs, you do it over a longer period of time. Trump, one of the things that, by the way, made this rally happen today, Trump says tariff on China will come down substantially from 145%. Is the headline from The Hill. And I think, you know, you look at that and you say, well, there's lessons to be learned here, I think. You know, if you're going to do this type of policy, it needs to be kind of a longer term thing that's probably passed through Congress. But also the situation that this, all these problems that we had probably can reverse themselves relatively quickly. If we kind of abandon some of these bigger tariffs and kind of come back to a more, you know, a more free trade-like approach, The bumps that we've had in the economy and the market probably do go away relatively quickly. You might say, well, long term, those problems wouldn't be solved. We'd still have the same situation. That's probably true. But the short term situation would probably get a lot better, a lot faster. We're seeing that day, you know, day by day, honestly, as these policies change. So we'll continue to follow it and see what happens. There's a difference between investing for profit and investing with purpose. Most people never ask where their money goes once it leaves their account. But the truth is, your investments may be funding companies that push political agendas and social experiments that do not match your values. You know, you work hard. Your investments should work hard as well, but they should work hard for what you believe in. Constitution Wealth helps you make sure that they do. This is a team that believes in faith, freedom, and the idea that financial decisions should reflect moral convictions. They help you take a real look at your portfolio. You know, no pressure, just a clear, honest conversation. And they help you find out what your money is doing and who is it helping. And they can help you make sure your portfolio is aligned with your values. Start your free consultation today at constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Check it out now, constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Now, Constitution Wealth is a registered investment advisor. You should review Constitution Wealth disclosures at constitutionwealth.com to understand their services and fees. All investing, of course, involves risk, including the risk of loss. I am a client of the firm, and this is a paid endorsement. My opinions, however, as always, are my own.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
I'm joined now by Jeff Fisher, Blaze TV host of Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher. Jeffy, welcome.
Hello, Stu.
Good to see you. Now, I was thinking of you this week because whenever something happens with a pope and a pope passes away, I always think of you because I think one of the first times I've ever talked to you back in the day, I remember you saying that you did not have to be Catholic to be the pope and that you were considering running for pope.
And I did. I did run for pope.
You did run for pope.
That was before they elected that darn Benedict.
Was it really? Okay. So it was a little bit later than I'm remembering, but I do remember it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. And then they kind of changed the rules and rearranged the thing. So apparently, okay, you got to be baptized Catholic now to be a Catholic pope. And so
it seems to be like a really important part of the process.
Yeah, and then it was at one point, anyone could be anyone as long as you were Catholic, you could be pope. Mm-hmm. Now you got to be a cardinal.
Wait, did they really change the rules in that time period? You have to be a cardinal, or did you always have to be a cardinal?
They always, for a long time, like the last pope to get voted in that wasn't a cardinal was, I don't know, 100, 200, 300 years ago or whatever.
Right, right.
But so it's kind of been an unwritten rule.
Okay, so it is theoretically possible.
Yeah.
Because like, it's like when they say Speaker of the House, when they're selecting Speaker of the House, there's always somebody that's like, well, what if we put Donald Trump in or whatever? Right. Because you don't technically have to be a member of the House.
So I'm just, I'm willing to take over, you know, Francis's job. You know, his funeral's on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
They start voting either right after that or a few days after, depending on when everybody gets in town and starts glad handing.
So right.
If they want to blow the white smoke for me, I'm in.
Really? What would you do? What would be your platform?
I would turn the Catholic, the whole Catholicism around. Bring it back to Catholicism.
Really? Make Catholicism great again?
Yes.
You would do that?
I would.
I don't think anyone, any Catholic, would trust you to do such a thing. In fact, I don't think most of them will let you in their homes.
That hurts. That hurts.
It does. I'm just saying.
That hurts.
It might hurt, but I do think it's accurate.
I'm glad I stopped by.
Yeah. I wanted to bring you on because I did a monologue today on the 2028 possibilities, not for Pope, but for the Democratic nomination. I mean, I think people look at this now. I mean, I know there's some people who have this, you know, I want a third term of Donald Trump thing. Setting that aside, though, a lot of people are on the, we would say, J.D. Vance is the clear leader. I think there's some people saying Ron DeSantis, maybe. There's a few others on the right. But the left is in this open field, right?
Who do they have?
Yeah. Ready for this list? I went through it earlier today. Can we bring this list up? I want you to look at this. Again, this is the countdown. It came from... I can't remember who it was
Stephen
from.
Stephen A. Smith.
The Hill. That's right. It was from The Hill. So number 10, Stephen A. Smith. Number 9, Rahm Emanuel. Number 8, Pete Buttigieg.
Is he still around?
Who, Rahm?
Rahm?
Yeah, I
still
guess.
Hanging it, around?
It's funny because he was like a mayor of Chicago for a while.
Yeah, they shipped him off. He was in.
Yeah.
In the Beltway.
Yes.
And then they shipped him off to Chicago.
Yeah, they just kind of shipped him out of there because he was like he was an Obama guy. He was a chief of staff for Obama. I don't think there's any...
No.
Any like desire for him. Buttigieg is falling off. He's down out at number 8. He was kind of one of the higher ones. It was J.B. Pritzker, I think, was number 7. Again, like some
that
rich.
That guy is.
I mean, Pritzker's, first of all, does not look healthy. Let's be honest about it, Jeffy. I know you, people don't know this about Jeffy, maybe, that you are fashion.
Thank you.
But you also are health.
Everything in moderation, Stu. That's my motto. That's my life goal.
That's totally your life.
Live my life.
And you've lived it that way. J.B. Pritzker doesn't look like he lives
by that. No, he does not. He spends his money. He spends a lot of money on food.
Yeah.
And why not? He's a billionaire.
Yeah, right? He can do
so
that.
He can do what he wants.
Yeah, I suppose. Who else do we have on the list? It was number 7 was J.B. Pritzker. Number 6 was Kamala Harris. Can you imagine if they went back to Kamala?
They won't do that. Right? I mean, they can't allow that to happen. She's terrible, will always be terrible. And she left herself scorched earth.
Yeah.
I mean,
what's next for her? Well, when you run for president in her situation, she's a vice president, it doesn't make any impact, right? She runs for president in a situation where everyone's saying, oh, we got to beat him. It's Donald Trump. He's a Nazi. And then she loses.
Right.
What's next for her?
I don't know. Like you know, everybody was talking about her being a governor, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that. Why? Why does she want to be a governor? That's a step down from vice president, right?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, it's something for her to do. What else is she going to do?
Just stay home and leave us alone.
Yes. Please.
Yeah.
I mean, part of me is okay with her going to California because then at least I don't have to live in California. That's a choice. I don't have to go over there.
That's a good point.
I'm here. As long as she's not governor of Texas, I mean, leave that to the poor people of California to deal with.
Yeah. Maybe, but I mean, I just don't see her doing much. Just go away.
Just go away.
Go be with hubby and bake cookies and pretend like you're happy.
Yeah.
Go away.
We have a few more on the list here. Number five.
Wes Moore. I heard.
What do you think of Wes?
He's the guy with the lightning bolt, right? He's a front runner.
People seem to like him. Yeah. He's getting a lot of big pub. He's the mayor, governor of Maryland.
Right.
There hasn't been a ton that has come. I don't think there's been a lot of attacks against him yet. So he's kind of in that
nobody knows who he is.
Losing era. Yeah, I don't think there's more of that.
The rest of them, though, Newsom, he's not good.
I don't think
he's
Newsom.
Terrible.
Newsom's terrible.
He's terrible.
Why do people even try it?
I don't know.
If you had to pick one off that list, show us that list one more time.
AOC.
You think she would be the one?
Absolutely. No, they're not going to give it to Shapiro. I mean
Shapiro,
I don't know if you know
this, would be scarier to me.
He's Jewish.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
That's fascinating, though. It is really seemingly the only reason.
Whitmer? No way. She's a nightmare from Michigan. AOC's the one?
Gosh, that's scary. AOC's
the one. And I don't know that she wants to run. I mean, maybe she does, but she wants the Senate seat, right? She wants to take Schumer's seat.
Yeah, but she would take that, but if she could get president, I think she would definitely be all over that. And she would be, people are like, oh, Trump's a dictator. Wait till you see AOC in action.
The Senate, for her. I mean, that's a position she can win.
Yes.
I think realistically she can't win president.
God, I hope you're right. I don't know, man.
No way.
I don't know. I mean, usually what happens is when you have a president that goes one way, there's the reaction the other way, right? You have whatever this person was. Like when George W. Bush was always criticized about not being able to speak clearly, right? And then you had the slick Barack Obama came in.
Right,
and then,
he was the guy.
And then it went to Donald Trump, right? Kind of the opposite, like no longer the slick academic. It was a guy who talked like normal people,
America. Right?
Yeah, and then you know, Donald Trump was erratic and crazy chaos. We have to have a return to normalcy with a guy who can't figure out, you know, he can't walk or say complete sentences. But that was his pitch, right? A return to normalcy, this old school guy. And then you go back to Trump. I think there is a possibility that people react and they want to go the extreme opposite way.
Wow.
And they see AOC as that person. I mean, she's such an idiot, though. It's hard to imagine people would see through that.
She really is.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not as bad as Kamala, though.
Oh, that's a statement. I have to think about that. I had to pause and think about that. I mean, she's farther. I think she's even farther left than Kamala or Kamala. But, man, I don't know. She certainly is a bigger, celebrity and multimedia force, right? Like, she's big on social media. She can attract that attention. God, I mean, the country
picks her. She is dumb as Kamala Harris.
I don't know, both idiots. But I will say this, if this country picks that direction, you just unplug the machine, right? You put the paper, you put a plastic bag over the head of the nation, you turn off the...
She's not going to be J.D. or... DeSantis
or one of those guys, yeah. I mean, I think, and certainly J.D. Vance is the overwhelming favorite, unless this goes really poorly, right? Like, if the Trump administration winds up in some negative position, then maybe J.D. Vance is hurt by that. But that's what I'm worried about. Like, if this goes wrong, like we have another financial crisis or something like that.
Which could happen.
They're going to pick the Democrat. And she's got a shot to win that primary, AOC.
Yes, she does.
That's terrifying, Jeffy.
Yes, she does. That's why you just want to wake up Friday morning, stew, and look up at the sky and see the smiley face in the sky.
Smiley.
5:30 a.m., we're going to have Saturn and Venus and the moon. And it's going to look like a smiley face in the sky.
Is that real?
And it's just...
I don't follow astrology as closely as you. Wait, they're going to line up in the sky like a smiley face?
Yes, and then everything will be okay.
Is that what we're supposed to believe?
Everything will be okay.
Okay. There you go. So what time does this happen again?
5:30 Eastern time in the sky. Look up and toward the moon. You'll see it.
And you'll see the moon is what? It's a crescent,
the moon,
smiley
the
face?
A crescent, and you'll see Saturn and Venus, and it'll look like a smiley face. And that's when you'll know, Stu. Everything's going to be okay.
Okay, see, Jeff, he's soothing you.
Everything's going to be okay.
Just sleep at the end of the show. Jeff Fisher, be sure to check out Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher to get all your astrology information that you might need. It's right here on Blaze TV and on the Blaze Podcast Network. Jeffy, appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. No, thank you.
Yesterday, Blaze TV dropped the final chapter of its exhaustive investigation into January 6th, and the locked vault is open. Dozens of uncut camera feeds now trace every corridor and staircase. Timelines that once clashed in the headlines unfold in a single screen. Officer Harry Dunn, we've talked about him a lot, his sworn account stands beside synchronized radio traffic, door logs, and cell phone data, raising serious questions that never reached primetime before. It's the truth about January 6th, a day in the life of Harry Dunn. The entire series streams exclusively on Blaze TV. Subscribe today, blazetv.com/J6. Start with episode one, follow the trail through yesterday's brand new finale, and decide what really happened for yourself. It's blazetv.com/J6. You also get access to Glenn's program, including his interview tonight with Donald Trump.